Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levernier. Coming up in this hour, adventure from the Lux Radio Theater, adapting Neil Paterson's story, The China Run. One of the few broadcasts that was based on just a story and not a movie, Paterson didn't write for radio too much except for two contributions to the Lux Radio Theater, the other being Man on a Tightrope, which was a motion picture in 1953, directed by Elia Kazan and starring Frederick March and Terry Moore. And although not a movie, the story was broadcast on Romance in 1951 on radio with John Daner playing one of the parts. He'll return in this next episode alongside John McIntyre, Barney Phillips, Parley Bear, and Larry Dobkin from June 8, 1953 on CBS.
From Hollywood, the Hollywood Radio Theater. Now, Miss Virginia Mayo, starring in Neil Paterson's exciting story, China Run.
Let me tell you, the sound of the sea is a wonderful thing. Maybe there's a sauna sweeter than the wind in an arching sail, but I don't know it. There may be a symphony grander than wild waves lashing, but I've never heard it. There is no lovelier sound than a bellboy in the bay when the sailor comes home, do you see? This is what I've heard, and I think it's so. But I know this, too. The blue rolling sea is a fickle sea. She's ready one time to grant your most cherished dreams, and waiting the next with death hiding just below the running waves.
Come in. Good evening, Father.
Good evening, Father.
Come in. You too, Jane. Although I didn't expect you. I wanted to see my son.
And I'm only a daughter. But it's nice to know I'm accepted, even if I am a woman.
Woman. A mere child, and yet she calls as her...
That's enough, Jane. I want to talk to you.
I know, Father.
You know.
It's always been the same ever since I was 20. You come home for a month, I do believe, only to talk me into shipping out to sea with you.
Yeah, but James,
and the night before you sail, you try again. Just like tonight.
Then it's no use.
No, Father. I don't know why you persist.
Because I'm a seaman, I guess. A master of a ship, a good ship. I want my son to succeed me.
You're so sentimental, Father. But someone must stay ashore to tend the ship's business.
You prefer a Dublin counting house to a sailing ship.
A sailing ship is like a jail, with a chance of getting drowned. And a sailor. Well, a sailor's a beast of burden.
Then there's nothing I can say.
Good night, Father. I'll see you tomorrow before you sail.
Father?
Yes, Jane.
Father, I want to go with you.
Yes, you should. What?
I want to go to sea.
Oh, but you can't, Jane. You're a girl.
It's 1845, Father. The world no longer belongs exclusively to its males.
Yeah, but the hazards are too great aboard a cargo ship. I have no facilities for passengers.
I have no intention of being a passenger.
But
I mean to be a sailor.
Jane, you're a girl.
I'm as good as any man and better than some.
Your brother, now. I can't make him go to sea.
And you can't make me stay ashore.
But the storms, the discomfort.
I want to go to sea.
Sickness and death.
I've got to go to sea.
The China Coast pirate.
I must, Father, I must.
But I'll be the laughing stock if Tansy McCoy finds out.
And who is Tansy McCoy?
A miserable Yankee, the vilest skipper on the China Run.
Sounds like a competitor.
He's the rankest man that ever offended my nostrils.
Then why worry about it?
All right, but...
No more buts, Father.
But... What will my crew say?
Let me me tell you, the crew said plenty. The crew of a windjammer is always wet and always numb from lack of sleep. For the wind and the weather wait for no man, and the sails are constantly changed. The work on a windjammer is endless. But the men find time to talk and talk and talk.
An evil omen it is, a woman aboard.
It wouldn't happen on a Yankee ship.
Fancy a Yank like Tansy McCoy suffering a lady aboard.
More like a witch she is, standing on the lee side of the poop.
Aye, bosun, but a handsome witch.
Aye, and always with a question.
Oh, she'd better ask questions. She doesn't know a head from a halyard.
Ah, now, she will. Her tongue's sharp, and it's shaped like a question mark.
She should be ashore and married.
Well, the kind of man she needs can't be found ashore. She needs a man like Tansy McCoy now. He'd answer her questions.
Bosun.
Aye, ma'am.
I've been watching the wind in the lower main top gallant sail and the upper main top sail.
That's the stunsails, ma'am. The main's a gallant and the mid topsail. They form the stunsails.
Yes. Well, anyway, they're always shredded at the lips. Now, why couldn't they be reinforced?
Reinforced, ma'am? With what?
Have you tried wax? If you wax the yarn, it might not cut the sail.
Ah, but who has the wax?
We have tallow dipped in the lamp. You might try that.
Tallow. Yes, ma'am, I think I might.
Yes, the crew had plenty to say. And so have the ship's officers.
Mistress West is uncommon handy about the ship.
Mr. Jordan. Even in weather.
Aye, Mr. Hammond. Even in petticoats. Wait till Tansy McCoy gets a look at him.
Yes. Don't you worry about McCoy. You just worry about your berth as second mate. I believe she's after it.
Begging your pardon, sir. She's after bigger game. Your berth as first mate.
There's a bit of nonsense. It takes years to master navigation alone. Even I still have much to learn about navigation.
I passed her cabin this morning, and I happened to glance through the porthole. She was reading.
A novel, I suppose. Some fluffy, romantic novel.
She was reading the memoirs of
a French actress,
an Irish admiral, called Advanced Principles of Navigation.
Evening, Captain. Mistress West.
Good evening.
Gentlemen, please be seated.
Thank you, sir.
And what do we have for supper tonight?
Same as we had for dinner.
Cold harness beef and black bread.
This is preposterous. Why, George Simpson's the best cook ever to sail with me.
He was, sir.
You talk like he's dead.
Well, he will be soon. Come down with a smallpox this morning.
He's in considerable pain, sir. Blisters have already appeared on the soles of his feet.
I'll get a razor and cut them off. That's the usual procedure, is it not?
Well, it is for anyone but George Simpson. He won't let us near him.
And he's a giant of a man, sir.
I'm aware of his stature, Mr. Jordan.
But he's in a corner of the forecastle with a belaying pin in one hand and his own razor in the other. He's promised to use him on the first man who comes near.
Now, a man that obstinate deserves to die.
Father.
Yes, my dear.
May I be excused?
Of course. My apologies, Mistress West. My talk of smallpox and blisters and razors is perhaps too strong.
If she wants a sailor's life, she must get used to sailor's talk. Run along, Jane, if you must. She is a little more than a child.
Simpson.
What do you have there?
A bolt of canvas. I'm going to measure you for a shroud. There. Now all we need is a sinker.
Mistress West, I don't want to die.
Oh, but you're going to, Simpson. Then we'll drop you over the side and the fishes will eat
you. Oh, no, 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 mistress. You cut off the soles of my feet. You do it.
And give me your razor, Simpson. Thank you.
Just let me holler, mistress, because I don't hold much with pain.
It'll be pain. Now, if you'd just let me have your belaying pin.
I...
That's right. Simpson, I'm going to tap you on the head with it, lightly. Just hard enough to keep you from feeling the pain. Now, whenever you're ready.
Go ahead, mistress.
All right, Simpson. Let me tell you, that day was long remembered. And the men gathered round the scuttle, but talked of it with wonder.
Ah, she's Yar, that girl. And a demon with a belaying pin. Is that right, Simpson?
A flying fish sailor she is, and I'm that proud of the lump on my head. It's like a bloody decoration.
It is that, but she done the decorating. Oh, guts she's got, and salt water in her veins.
And so they talked, all of them, that is, save Mr. Hammond. And he was soon to learn.
What's the reading, Mr. Hammond? Right on, sir.
And we'll make Borneo by morning.
Yes, sir. But if I may say so, sir, you fixed the longitude correct to a hair's breadth. And in the gale with one star poking out of a cloud bank for not more than 3 seconds. You have, sir, a genius for precise navigation.
I'm sorry to disabuse you, Mr. Hammond. The calculations were made by my daughter. Good evening, sir. Enjoy your shore leave in Borneo.
Let me tell you, there's nothing so wondrous strange as your first leave in a foreign port. And there's no port so strange as Borneo. Where 30-foot snakes and 6-foot anteaters and deer no bigger than jackrabbits wander into town to look at the people. And the people themselves have certain quirks, like bathing every day.
Where to now, Mistress West?
Really, Mr. Jordan, I can manage without your protection.
Your father's orders, ma'am.
Nonsense. I have my belaying pin.
Sorry, Mistress West.
And the sounds of Borneo are strange. The tiny deer I mentioned before have a habit of barking like dogs. And a Burmese man plays a bamboo flute. That is no interest whatsoever, except that he plays it with his nose. The strangest sound of all came from an outdoor saloon.
Hello, 500 brave Americans.
Who's that?
That's Captain Tansy McCoy.
Who's this Captain Tansy McCoy?
I don't rightly know, ma'am. Some say he's wild and dissolute, little better than a pirate. Some say he's the finest Yankee skipper that ever drove a ship.
And what do you say, Mr. Jordan?
All I know is he carries a cannon mounted on the forepeak.
He sees it. He's coming this way.
And who, sir, are you staring at?
The lady, sir, the lady. Trim ship she is, and she looks to be running free.
That's enough, sir. One more insult and I'll be forced.
You're forcing me first.
And now, my pretty lass.
Take another step.
I love a lass with juice and growl.
I'm warning you.
Worn away. You wouldn't hit me with that belaying pin.
Of course I wouldn't. And that's what happened, Father.
What about Mr. Jordan?
I left him with some missionaries. His jaw was broken.
And McCoy?
I left him on the ground. I think I might have killed him.
Good riddance. What'll I do for a second mate?
Father, I'd like Mr. Jordan's berth as second officer.
I don't know.
You do know.
I wonder.
You know I can handle it.
Of course you can. But I wonder if you didn't plan it all just to get Jordan's berth.
Let me tell you, there is no prouder lot than those who follow the sea. And the proudest time of all is the time of your first command. Especially with the challenge of a race. Helmsman, half point, starboard.
Aye, aye, sir. Ma'am. I beg your pardon.
Oh, that's all right, Helmsman. You get used to it.
Mistress West, that ship up the starboard quarter is still coming up fast.
Lift the helms off another point.
Aye, aye, sir.
What's the commotion, Jane?
A ship, Father. Take a look through the telescope.
Oh. A Yankee clipper.
Oh, with a cannon on the forepiece. Such fancy McCall's ship.
If it's a race they want, we'll give it to them. Bosun, loose the Tregaron.
Aye, aye, sir.
Loose the Tregaron!
The Yanks still gaining, Father.
Bosun, can't you set more sail into the Royal?
Captain, we've set everything we got, except in the second mate's petticoat.
No use, Father. He's hard upon us and coming alongside.
If after trouble, he's going to find it.
Ahoy! Ahoy! Captain West!
It's McCoy, Father. I didn't kill him after all.
Pick up, you Yankees! Come!
Captain West! I want to marry your daughter.
Never, not for £1,000.
Too much, Captain West. But I'll give you £100.
Thank you.
Careful, Captain. Till the lady aboard. See you in the Philippines.
In just a moment, we will continue with Act Two of the Hollywood Radio Theater. Make a friend, and you make an ally. There's a thought for you to keep in mind, as many another American has. In 1864, Clara Barton gave up a successful job in the patent office in Washington and devoted the rest of her life to bringing physical and mental aid to the wounded and dying on the battlefield. At first, it was the soldiers of the American Civil War. But when the war ended, she was forced to go abroad to recuperate from nervous exhaustion. While she was in Switzerland, Napoleon declared war on Prussia. Clara Barton was urged to return to her own country, but she refused. She felt it was her duty to remain in Europe and help the wounded of this new war. It didn't make any difference to her if they were French or Prussian. She didn't ask the nationality of the sufferer when she stopped the flow of blood from a soldier's wound. In spite of many inconveniences and hardships, she traveled across the rugged German countryside to reach the Prussian front lines. But there she was told that the only way she could be allowed into a frontline camp would be as a prisoner of war. Clara Barton agreed, and as a prisoner until the end of the war, she continued to do her work with the wounded Prussian soldiers. After the war, she remained in Europe to help the defeated French. When she sailed for home in 1873, grateful Europeans bestowed on her many medals of honor, including the Gold Cross of Remembrance, the Jewel of the Red Cross, and the Iron Cross of Merit. Once again, an unselfish American had discovered that by helping others, you help your country.
About the Philippines. More than 7,000 islands sprawling like spilled pepper into the China Sea. Sort of an interesting place where a lot of people prefer roast dog or a fried locust to any delicacy you could name. A place where nobody looks at an orchid, possibly because more than 900 varieties grow wild. In Manila, they make the world's best spittoons and go to a university called Santo Tomas, which is founded in 1585, half century before Harvard. Yes, Manila's an interesting sort of place, full of surprises. First came not an hour after we birthed.
Top of the morning, Mrs. West, ma'am.
A glorious day to you both.
It may continue to be so, but I've got my doubts. There's a visitor on the poop wishing a word with your father.
My father's ashore, as you very well know.
Aye, and the visitor, therefore, is wishing a word with you.
Very well, I'll see him.
It's only one thing, ma'am. It's Captain Tansy McCoy.
The audacity, dear man, to set foot on this deck. Inform Captain McCoy that I have nothing to discuss with him, either now or any future occasion. And kindly to serve me by taking his dissolute and worthless self off my ship.
Here he comes now, ma'am. Maybe you'd better tell him.
Bolton, set that water bucket by me.
Aye, aye, ma'am.
Thank you. You may go now.
Ah, there you are.
Captain McCoy, will you
please... I come to the point, Mistress West. I come to call on Captain West to present my credentials.
For what purpose?
With the hand of his daughter in marriage.
My father were here, I'm sure he wouldn't give it to you.
Well, then it's better that he is absent. Quite frankly, Mrs. West, I don't hold with your stodgy Irish custom of asking a father's permission.
And quite frankly, Captain McCoy, I don't hold with your savage American practice of asking no one's permission of kidnapping young ladies in a Western Indian fashion.
You've been grossly misinformed, but why should I ask your father? I don't want to marry him.
And I would never marry you or anyone without my father's consent.
That gives me little choice except to kidnap you in the Western Indian fashion.
Take one more step and this water bucket will cool your ardor.
Takes more than water to...
Look at our lady. She washed him right off the ship.
And into the sea, cleansing him of his sin.
Of which there are no doubt plenty.
That night, the dockside pubs were full of the affair, and the ship's chandlers who came on board shook their heads gravely. And the next morning, a meeting was convened, and the folks...
Now, every one of you knows why we're here.
Tansy McCoy is a dangerous man to be made fool of.
We must protect our Mistress West.
Aye. From herself, before she kills him.
I'm against it. Chain stays at anchor, I'm against it. Now, why can't she stay aboard ship? Why must she go ashore?
Well, no, she's got her right. And if she don't, well, it looks unseemly for all of us. I mean, what I mean is, it's like we're afraid.
Aye. McCoy and his yanks don't frighten me. I'll be her bodyguard.
And I.
Well, I'm still against it. Yeah, but deal me in.
It was an extraordinary procession. The bosun, armed with a revolver. The giant Simpson with a belt full of knives which clanked together as he walked. And the helmsman, full of swagger and swashbuckling fear. And the young girl, imperious as any queen, who rather enjoyed it all.
Begging your pardon, ma'am, but how long are you aiming to stare at it?
I'm sorry. Suppose my shopping holds little interest for you.
The truth is, ma'am, it is a wondrous batik. But I'm more interested in a good stiff drop of the wet.
Of course. Perhaps I can come back.
Oh, no need, missy. The batik is yours.
Mine?
Oh, yes, missy. A gift from a gentleman over there.
Where?
It's McCoy, ma'am.
Oh.
I'm glad you liked the batik, ma'am.
I cannot accept it.
But I insist.
And I insist no Yank will give the Mistress West gift.
I already have. And I've got something for you, too.
All right.
Now, Mistress West.
Stay away from me.
Your zoo wants payment, ma'am. And so do you.
You, Jane. All of you look like you've been through the eye of a hurricane.
Well, don't you think that
man is...
Quiet! What happened?
We met Captain McCoy.
But Jane, where's your skirt?
Father, I have just experienced as public a humiliation as has ever befallen one of my sex.
No, miss. It wasn't as bad as all that.
And we got in a few good licks of our own, sir.
I knifed him in the shoulder and then... Well, then he must have hit me from behind.
And I hit him with a spittoon. You should have seen the spittoon.
Sir, I shot him in the arm and then... Well, then I surely don't know what happened.
Then allow me to tell you... You, Mr. Simpson, were sprawled unconscious in the street.
But, ma'am, I...
Helmsman, you were stretched out on a bench as neat as at your own funeral. And you, Bosun, were tossed over a table and were propped stiff-backed and glassy-eyed against a wall.
Now, miss.
And then he came after me.
Jane, he didn't...
He swept me off my feet and onto a counter. He pinned me down with his wounded arm, the blood dripping onto my finery. He seized my skirt, ripping it away, threw the silk around his arm and knotted it with his teeth. And then I fled back to the ship in only my three petticoats, closely followed by my bodyguard.
Now, look, Mistress
Get
White.
Get all you three.
I.
Now, Jane, you know, Americans are a strange race, particularly at love or war.
They seem to confuse the two.
Perhaps you'd better marry him.
Marry him? Never.
Do you love him, Jane?
I could only love a man who honors, not disgraces me. Who rescues me from violence, not drags me into it. Who shields me from the ills and affronts of the world, not showers me with them. Who sustains, not humiliates me in an hour of need.
My, how you run on. You're a child, Jane, confusing a husband with a knight in the novel on a white charger.
All I want is for him to let me alone.
He'll never do that.
Oh, yes, he will. He doesn't want me. I'm just an excuse for him to start a brawl. Father, if you'll only belay my impossibly useless bodyguard...
That I won't do. I'll increase it.
Please, Father, just in Siam.
There'll be no trouble in Siam, Jane.
What makes you so sure?
Because I intend to play the stern father. You won't be seeing the sights and prowling the marketplaces.
You don't expect me to stay aboard ship.
Oh, nothing so drastic as that. But each day you'll go to a home of a friend of mine, an artist. I want him to paint your portrait.
All right, Father. I will on one condition.
Which is?
No bodyguard.
Well, I suppose it's just as well. Otherwise, I won't have an able-bodied seaman left in the crew.
Now, Bangkok, in Siam, is a town of nitric salesmen, an illustrious artist, who aren't quite as peculiar as a certain species of Siamese perch, which climb trees. In Siam, the umbrella, and not the crown, is a symbol of royalty. And it's impossible for a foreigner to learn the language. Not that it's so difficult. You see, the people are so polite, no one presumes to correct your mistake. There were six gloriously peaceful days in Bangkok. Six quiet days of sitting like a waterlogged sponge for a portrait. Not a sign of Captain Tansy McCoy. Then, on the seventh day...
Come in, Mistress West.
Is my portrait ready?
Indeed, Mistress West. And I have a visitor. That is, you have a visitor.
I? I know no one in Bangkok.
How quickly you forget an old friend.
Captain McCoy.
None other, ma'am. I'm much taken by your picture here. Mm. Turn around.
I'll do no such thing.
Oh, ma'am, you should always blush. It's so becoming. Now turn around. Thank you, ma'am. Yeah, yes, sir. You're something pretty special for the China Sea. You know, you knocked the spots off of any of the last batch of dancing girls the Frenchman brought in.
How dare you?
Why is it, Mistress West, you can't accept my compliments any more than you'll accept my gifts?
What right have you to give them?
What right have you to refuse them? You rate yourself too high.
You rate me too easy.
Just remember this. There are growlers enough in this sea. Now, I'll waste no more of my time. But first, we'll see if Temper will saw you. Min Sing. How much is the picture?
Well, now, you see...
How much?
£8 British, $50 American.
Here's 60. Mrs. West, oh, wait!
Captain McCoy, if you are glassed on the street, you'll find we are being watched. Watched by not less than 20 seamen from my ship. Perhaps you'd like to fight them all.
I think I'll have the opportunity. They're coming this way.
So you require anything, ma'am?
No, thank you, Bosun.
Well, ma'am, you want any help?
No, of course not. Captain McCoy here is seeing me back to the ship. Are you ready, Captain?
At your service, Mistress West.
Wait here, Captain McCoy. I'll go fetch my father.
And Mrs. West, you think I'll have trouble with him?
Oh, not half the trouble you had with me.
Yeah, that was enough. He's always been dead set against me.
Don't worry. I'll be back. Father.
Some other time, dear.
Listen to me, Father. I've brought a guest. Captain McCoy.
Well, splendid. It's bound to happen. Now, if you'll let me get on with my work.
What's the matter, Father?
A knotty little problem in nitrates.
Can I help, Father?
I doubt it, Jane. But perhaps Fancy McCoy can. Now might be your chance to find out if McCoy is that knight in shining armor you were searching for.
What do you mean?
Where is Captain McCoy? Show him to the wardroom, by all means.
In Guam, I saw men ride cattle instead of horses.
Possibly because they don't have horses to ride.
And the women. The women cut their hair.
Terrible, isn't it?
And I've heard in Japan people fly kites like children and eat grilled ape and pickled seaweed.
That's true, true. But you know, the weirdest place I've ever been is an island, half a world away.
Oh?
Mm-hmm. Where there are 3,000 sacred wishing wells. And according to the natives, the wee folk flourish and... It's customary to keep them from curdling fresh milk by putting a coffin nail near the crock.
How curious. What's the name of this place?
Ireland.
Oh.
Have you heard of it, Captain West?
What? Well, I beg your pardon, sir.
It's quite all right, sir. I fear I've overstayed my welcome.
Oh, not at all. It's just...
What is it, Father?
Captain McCoy... I may speak bluntly before you. I'm in some difficulty.
That's so?
I've discovered that my nitrate cargo is underweight.
But the hold is filled. I saw it.
It's green, Jane. Green as a sapling. Liable to 10% shrinkage in the passage to China.
Make the company remove the stuff and reload.
The manager refused to do so.
Why are you telling me this, Captain West?
Well, I thought perhaps you might join with me in protest. You've shown certain attributes of leadership among the other shipmasters in this harbor. Together, all of us could force...
You overlook one consideration, Captain West. The nitrate in my hold is not green.
Then you won't help.
What made you think I would?
Well, with things what they are between Jane and...
Sir, are you offering me your daughter's hand for a mess of stinking nitrate?
Captain McCoy, my father meant no such thing. Will you please leave our ship?
Gladly. And, Mistress West, why don't you put a coffin nail in the nitrate? Perhaps it would keep it from curdling.
I'm sorry, Jane. I shouldn't have ever mentioned it.
It's all right, Father.
But I've ended your romance.
Never began, Father. He isn't the only growler in the sea. And he certainly isn't the only shipmaster in Bangkok.
What do you mean by that?
We'll call a meeting of shipmasters. Perhaps our hold isn't the only one loaded with green nitrate. Perhaps if we all get together, something will be done. Even without the exalted presence of Pansy McCoy. Gentlemen, the count shows that a little more than half the ships in this harbor have been loaded with bad odor nitrate. The show of hands has indicated that all of us, regardless of whether we've been personally victimized or not, mean to stand together.
That's right.
A delegation comprising Captains West, Woodward, Clausen, and Werner will present a bill of particulars to the company in the morning. One more point, gentlemen, before we adjourn. Of all the ships in port, only Captain Tansy McCoy's is not represented here tonight. Father, what did the company say?
Oh, they deplored the incredible error of loading green nitrate.
And what did they mean to do about it?
Just about anything and everything.
Wonderful.
They've offered us a special cargo, selected with the management in person and at a reduced rate. It'll be loaded at our convenience.
And when is our convenience?
Now. Jane. I just want to say, Jane, I'm that proud of you.
Thank you, Father.
If only...
Father, don't start that again. You so much as mention me in the same breath with Tansy McCoy,
All right, Jane. At this time, I'll supervise the loading myself.
Bolton, secure that cargo line before somebody gets hurt.
Aye, aye, sir.
Well, not like that. Let me show you.
Careful, sir. That nitrate's heavier than pig iron.
Yeah. All the more reason for safety. For...
Captain West!
Easy, man. Your father's hurt. He's hurt bad. Mistress West?
Yes, Mr. Hammond.
The last of the new cargo has been stored, Mistress West. And I checked the manifest myself.
Very good, sir. Have you hired a third officer?
I did. An Englishman. He'd been on the beach 2 years and happy to catch a berth home.
You've been a great help, Mr. Hammond.
Thank you.
I'd like to do more, Mistress West. Much more.
Mr. Hammond, since my father's death, there's no longer a reason for your calling me Mistress West.
I've been wanting to call you Jane for a long while.
You're jumping to conclusions. Please address me as Captain West.
Captain?
I'm taking command of the ship.
Well, I have master's papers and seniority, and I'm the first officer.
And you shall continue to be so long as you carry out your duties. Now set the watch, Mr. Hammond. We're sailing for Foochow.
Aye, Captain West.
Now, Foochow is a river port, rich and stinking. The stench comes from the River Ming, from the collected garbage of the centuries, consigned to a wet grave by the populace and the river pirates. Its wealth comes from the illustrious tea of the hinterland. All day long, the buffalo trains converge on the city, bearing tea in lacquered chests. And all day long, among the reefs and the shallows, the pirates wait for a likely ship. What is it?
Yeah, Mr. Harmon's compliments, ma'am. He'd like you on deck at once.
Very well. What now, Mr. Hammond?
That ship off stern. It's Tansy McCoy's. History repeating itself.
But this time, Mr. Hammond, the result will be different. I mean to crew up in Foochow before him.
Captain West, this ship cannot outsail a Baltimore clipper.
We won't outsail him, Mr. Hammond. We'll outsmart him. We'll bear toward shore as we round the cape, half the distance.
Yes, but the pirates, they'll take the cargo and they'll hold you for ransom.
Are you afraid, Mr. Hammond?
Now listen to me. I served once with a captain whose wife they took. And they finally returned her. Finger by finger.
I'll worry about my fingers if you'll proceed with my command.
Aye, aye, Captain West.
We're holding our lead.
That's small consolation, Captain West. Look forward off the bow.
Those junks?
24 of them, each manned by 20 men. They're pirates, Captain West, and they're heading for us.
Swing back to mid-channel.
No, we can't get by them. A couple more minutes, they'll be aboard.
They'll never take us.
They're closing in now.
We'll ram them.
That won't help. Nothing will help.
It's McCoy! Open fire on him!
Ah, Captain West. McCoy is moving up alongside.
Mr. Hammond, the megaphone, please.
Captain West, are you all right, ma'am?
Captain McCoy, I am indebted to you.
Save your breath, Captain West.
My thanks to you, sir.
Save your sight for Foochow. Will you meet me at the King Henry? Will you, Captain West?
Maybe, Captain McCoy.
I'll be waiting, Captain West.
Is the cargo moving, Mr. Hammond?
Well, now, Captain, the tea is in the hold, and everything is squared away.
Then I'll take a look at Foochow. I might not be back for supper.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, Mr. Hammond, perhaps you could direct me to the King Henry.
Well, you go right up to... Well.
Mrs. West.
Yes?
Please accept my condolences to your father, Mrs. West. I'm at your service if there's anything
Who
I can...
Who are you, sir?
Behrend's the name. George Behrend, local agent for the ship. And now, if you'll permit me, I have business with your captain. Who is your captain, Mrs. West?
I am.
I see. I beg your pardon.
I said I'm master of the ship.
But a girl like you, you obviously don't have the master's papers.
No.
But then the insurance will be revoked, and the cargo will be jeopardized. Well, the ship must be handed over to the first officer immediately.
Don't tell me how to run my ship, Mr. Behrend.
I'll tell you this, madam. Unless your first officer takes over immediately, I shall notify the British consul and you'll not get clearance papers. You'll rot in Fu Chau till your command is confirmed by Dublin. And that will never happen. Good day, madam.
You were asking me about the King Henry, Captain West.
Delay that, Mr. Hammond. We're sailing.
Sailing? But you heard what he said.
We're sailing immediately for Dublin. Let me tell you, it's a sorry thing letting your ship to harbor for the last time. Never again to go down to the sea in a British ship.
But it's impossible. Preposterous.
James, it wasn't impossible. I brought the ship home.
Without papers, without clearance? What a risk.
I could get master's papers with your consent.
Perhaps. But there are other considerations. You risked your reputation and our good name to dally with some Yankee skipper.
I did not.
You were to meet him in Fu Chau.
So Hammond's been talking.
And you risked the cargo with pirates by racing the Yank up the Ming. No, I'm afraid the Admiralty would consider you an unfit person to represent the Crown on a trade ship. And besides, you're a girl, Jane.
I'm a woman.
But a woman can't hold a position of authority over men. It's against nature.
And so it went. Months of wrangling. Months of sitting by the window in silence, watching the gulls and the ships in from the Irish Sea. Plenty of time to remember the things that could never be forgotten. There was Jordan, the second mate.
Mistress West is uncommon handy about ships.
And Jason, the cook, a giant of a man.
A flying fish sailor, she is. I'm proud of that lump on my head. It's like a bloody decoration.
And the bosun, he thought of Stunfels.
Here's Yar, that girl. A daemon with a belaying pin.
And the helmsman, who took the first orders I gave.
Aye, it's guts the Mistress West has. And salt water in her veins.
And Tansy McCoy, a wild and dissolute man.
Trim ship she is. She looks to be running free.
Then, one day in September... Yes?
My compliments, Captain West.
Captain McCoy.
I waited for you in Fu Chau. You never came.
I know.
And then I learned the reason, Captain West, and so I came to you 5,000 miles by the log.
Isn't it wonderful?
There's just one thing, Captain West. There's only one master of my ship. That's me.
Yes, Captain McCoy.
But I'd be proud to make you mistress of it.
Oh, Captain McCoy.
I could use a good first mate who's handy with a belaying pin.
Oh.
Captain West, will you marry me?
I... Oh, Tansy.
Jane, my darling.
Let me tell you, the sound of the sea is a wonderful thing. And the wind in an arching sail is sweet. But not half so sweet as the soft words spoken by the man you love. This is what I've heard. And now I know it's sure. Sure is my name is Mrs. Chancy McCoy.
Now, here's Virginia Mayo.
It's good to be back on land again. But I thoroughly enjoyed playing the part of Jane. And I'll be listening next week to your play, The Lady and the Tumbler.
Yes, don't miss it, Virginia. It's a colorful and amusing romance with a dash of mystery. And it was chosen as a starring vehicle by one of our most popular stars, Fred McMurray.
Ah, sounds exciting, Ken. Good night.
Good night. Theater is produced by Mr. Irving Cummings. Our orchestra is under the direction of Rudy Schrager. This is Ken Carpenter inviting you to join us next week at this same time for another presentation of the Hollywood Radio Theater. Hollywood Radio Theater is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
The Lux Radio Theater, better known as the Hollywood Radio Theater for the Armed Forces Radio Service, from June 8, 1953. And that wraps up this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.